17 minutes after 8, it's time now for the Big Picture program with the Rain Man himself, A.B. Dawji. We introduce him at this minute. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Uncle A.B.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How is the weather in wonderful Durban today?
Alhamdulillah, things are so wonderful here, bright and breezy. I decided not to go onto my mountain bike today. I just decided to stay at home, do about 100 push-ups and a little bit of skipping.
As long as you keep fit, Uncle A.B.
Yes.
Now, tell me, see, earlier on we spoke to Jalals. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're from Melbourne, Australia. They drop those bags and run, you know. It's like a prank they play, you know, just to the stereotypes associated with Muslims, you know, being terrorists and all of this. So these guys, they wear Arab garb, and then they drop a bag and they just start running. And they video the reaction of people to this. Uncle A.B., if someone did that to you, would you run or would you first check? That and or no, it's going to be a prank.
It's quite a difficult question. Eh? It's like mixed feelings. Eh? And you know the definition of mixed feelings?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing your mother-in-law going over a cliff in your new Mercedes Benz.
Uncle A.B., what is the story that caught your eye?
Well, for the first story, we go to India. And this is the story about a very dangerous criminal. And the good news is that this dangerous criminal has been arrested. Police have released the name of this criminal. His name is Bubbly, a black individual and a repeat offender. Now hear this. This dangerous criminal is a goat. Yes, you heard it right. A goat in the town of Janakpur, which is 211 miles north of the state capital, Raipur. The goat, Bubbly, went into the garden of a judge and chowed all his flowers. Here is what police sub-inspector R. Srivastav reported. He said, the goat owner has been told several times by the judge's representative not to let the animal graze on other people's lawns. The goat would eat all the plants. We received a written complaint from the judge's office on the basis of which we have registered a case. An investigation is on. And the goat has been arrested. The owner of the goat, Abdul Hassan, was also arrested. I'm following this very important story very closely. And breaking news is that the goat and its owner are now out on bail. Well, let me say this, dear listeners. At the risk of being charged for contempt of court, I hereby declare that for getting the goat arrested, the eminent judge is a first-class donkey. And still keeping with the donkey theme, let me ask you this question. When you are the leader of a country and you speak about how the economy is going through a very rough patch and how people are battling, and then you go to launch a housing project for poor people, how do you go about it? How do you do it? Well, let me tell you what you shouldn't do. You should not lay out a 4-kilometer red carpet leading to the housing estate and drive over it with your motorcade.
Mm.
So where and when did this happen? Well, it happened in Cairo. And Abdul Fattah al-Sisi and his convoy of cars drove on this 4-kilometer red carpet. You can't get more insensitive and vulgar than that. And finally, dear listeners, it is a well-known fact that I am an unrehabitable chocoholic.
Me too.
That's right. I would polish off a large slab of Cadbury's whole nut in one evening. And so, I was very intrigued by the evidence that Pastor Penuel Mguni gave at the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities. That was the name of the commission. Now, you may remember that this pastor fed members of his congregation live snakes, rats, and human hair. So, the commission called him up to explain why he was doing this. It's a very serious matter, of course, and he could face many charges as a fraudster. Well, this is what Pastor Penuel Mguni said. He said, I did not feed people snakes. I feed them chocolates. Now, this power is on the tongue. So, if the power is on the tongue, you are able to turn everything into food as Jesus did in chapter 2, in John chapter 2. He turned water into wine. So it's the same process that has happened in the church. Many people, they listen too much to media, not to the reality. So the reality, here it is, it was chocolate. Well, I think that this guy is brilliant. Really, I think he's brilliant.
He is indeed.
Now, I'm going to catch one of those brown grass snakes that lurk around Isipingo. Then I will get hold of a green mamba and take the two snakes to the pastor. Maybe he can make a peppermint crisp chocolate out of them. Oh, and one more thing. The good pastor also told the commission that he turned the rats into peanut butter before feeding his congregation. And so, with your permission, dear listeners, I think that there is no contest whatsoever. The Mampara pastor is the Ulu of the week.
He is. I know what he likes to eat, Uncle Abby. Pasta.
Hasta la vista.
Now, moving on to U.S. election, what have you been checking out on that front, Uncle Abby?
Well, the elections that are due to take place in the U.S. could be historic. The one that took Obama to the White House was historic. For the first time, a black man became president. And some may even whisper that a Muslim became president of the U.S. And the forthcoming elections could also be historic. A woman could be president, that's Hillary Clinton. A Jewish person could be president, and that's Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
A clown could be president, and that's Donald Trump. Now, I am not the one that's calling him a clown. The newspaper, New York Daily News, had five different front page photos showing Trump's face made up as a clown with white paint and a big red nose. Wednesday's front page was quite funny. You can actually Google it. Type just two words, Trump and the word clown. And that's what you get. The front page had a photo of him as a clown with a huge headline next to it, Dawn of the Brain Dead. And a subheading said, Clown comes back to life with New Hampshire win as mindless zombies turn out in droves. Good heavens. The paper describes him as brain dead and his supporters as zombies. You can't get more insulting than that. And of course, Trump got very cross and he tweeted, Dopey Mort Zuckerman, owner of the worthless New York Daily News, has a major inferiority complex. The paper will close very soon.
Hmm.
And this description of Trump's supporters as zombies reminds me of a famous quotation. Can you, dear listeners, guess who said this? How fortunate for leaders that men do not think. Let me repeat that. How fortunate for leaders that men do not think. Can you guess? Well, it was none other than Adolf Hitler. Hitler knew exactly what to say to sway the people. He spoke about making Germany great. He had charm and charisma. He spoke straight and he spoke tough. And he blamed Jews for the problems of Germany. And that led to the terrible massacre of millions, the Holocaust. Donald Trump has been repeating one mantra. I'm going to make America great again. And he has charm and charisma. He speaks straight and he talks tough. And he sees Muslims as a great threat to America. He says he will build a wall to keep the Mexican murderers and rapists out. The zombies applauded loudly. He says that he will keep the Muslims out. The zombies applauded wildly. He said that if he stood up in Fifth Avenue in New York and shot someone, he wouldn't lose votes at all. Of course he wouldn't. The zombies would love it. And here's something very shocking. Trump used a very vulgar word to describe Ted Cruz. He used a crude word. He said that Ted Cruz is a... No. I can't say the word, but it refers to a woman's anatomy. And of course, the zombies cheered. Okay, let me tell you what really shocked me about Trump.
Hmm.
He could be the president of the United States.
Hmm.
Now, there are numerous laws, domestic and international, that say that to torture someone is a crime. Listen to this. The UN Convention Against Torture. The term torture means any act by which severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental, is intentionally inflicted on a person. Article 2 of the 4th Geneva Convention. Any measures of such a character as to cause the physical suffering or extermination of protected person in their hands. Article 7 of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. Torture means the intentional infliction of severe pain or suffering, whether physical or mental. United States Code Title 18. Torture means an act committed by a person acting under the color of law, specifically intended to inflict severe physical or mental pain or suffering. So, it's very, very clear. International law recognizes torture as a crime. Even U.S. law outlaws it completely. It's a crime. What does the potential future president of the United say? When he was asked in a debate in New Hampshire what he thought about waterboarding, he answered, "I will bring back waterboarding and a hell lot worse than waterboarding. Can you believe it? President Trump will use torture, which is a crime. You know, I really want him to be a president. I want him to be president. America won't be great again. America will go down the toilet. I'm not backing Hillary. She is for war and she is for big money, big business.
Sounds like it?
She is for big money. What do you call a woman who takes money to do anything that is asked of her? No, I don't have an answer for that one. She is too crafty, and many people openly call her a liar. So yes, I hope that Bernie Sanders wins. Yes, of course, he is Jewish. And immediately one would assume that he would be greatly sympathetic to Israel. Well, he is not, by all accounts, terribly religious. I read the Jerusalem Post every day, and the Israelis are not too keen on Sanders. He hasn't been speaking strongly in support of Israel, and I don't think that he is practicing taqiyya. Let me now make a public confession, my dear Maulana. I am a secret admirer of someone. Did you get that? I am a secret admirer of someone that you all know.
And the line just dropped on us as young Levy was getting to his point. We'll try and get him on again, inshallah. Just a reminder that we spoke to Jalal's earlier on the bomb pranksters out of Australia. You know, they drop the bags and run away. If someone dropped a bag outside or close to where you are, what would be your first instinct? Would you run away? Or would you know immediately that it's a prank? You can SMS 48855. You can WhatsApp 0727861548. Send a tweet at EJAZ_K. Yes, let us know how you feel. What would be your first reaction if someone just dropped a bag close to where you are? Would you run? Or would you already know that it's a prank just from the onset? So keep it locked to Radio Islam International. We'll try and get Uncle Abi on in a few seconds' time, inshallah. Let's go for a quick break and we'll be back after this. Yes, it is time to connect with Uncle Abi once again. Uncle Abi, you with us?
5 minutes, I was talking to myself.
Yeah, you were just speaking about your secret admirer and then the phone dropped.
Yes. You know, as I said, sometimes I like him and sometimes I hate him. And no, I'm not wearing pink socks at all. I'm speaking about Brother Hussein, also known as POTUS, President of the United States, Barack Obama. Now, I'm very envious of him. Yes, it's true. I heard him giving a speech at a masjid last week, and again this week he gave another at a town hall. This guy's got style. He is captivating. He is articulate. He is so relaxed and delivers his speech as if he is only speaking to one person, speaking to you. His voice rises and falls at just the right pace, and he knows how to deliver the punchline. Great timing. His humor is subtle and understated, and he makes me laugh a lot. He's a very polished speaker, and of course, he is quite a smart fellow, a great intellectual, no doubt about that. Yes, dear listeners, he is quite unflappable. Throw anything at him, and he will hit it for six. Yes, dear listeners, I am deeply envious of Obama. By the way, do you know what's the difference between envy and jealousy? Well, I'm sure you, dear listeners, you thought it's the same thing, didn't you? And you used it wrongly many times, didn't you? Well, I know I did. because I checked it up this morning and I found that there's a huge difference between the word envy and jealousy. And of course, I'm not going to tell you, no time for that right now. Check it up. It's easy. Put three words, envy, jealousy, and the word difference into Google and the explanation will pop up. And then forever, you will use each word correctly, and you can also show off when someone uses it wrongly. See how you can appear to be an intellectual like Barack Obama? Anyway, his speech at the town hall was brilliant. He spoke about many things, but he had two main themes. Firstly, he spoke about how big money was buying the U.S. elections. He said that just 150 families in the United States were contributing more money to the candidates than the combined donations of all the rest of the population of America. He said that this undermines democracy. He said that lobby groups are influencing policy. I don't think that he was speaking on anyone in particular, but it must have made his friend Hillary Clinton very uncomfortable, because big business, Wall Street, has been giving her millions of dollars, and she is the darling of the weapons manufacturer. She is very enthusiastic about waging wars. But back to Barack Obama. 9 years ago, on 20th January, in fact, the next president will also be installed into the White House on the 20th of January. That's the date when presidents take office. So when he became president, when he was campaigning to be the president a few months before that, money poured in from ordinary people, not big business, the millions from big business. And he got money in big and small donations, $20, $100, and so on. And now it's the same with Bernie Sanders. Big business doesn't like him because he's a declared socialist and wants to take away the power of the big banks, and he wants to raise the taxes on the billionaires. That is why young people like him. But let me tell you what else Obama spoke about, and he really emphasized this point. He said that political discussion and debates, especially among top politicians, meaning those who are presently standing for elections right now, the language, their language is crude, vulgar, and disrespectful. He said that it sets a very bad example, especially to young people. Of course, this is true, and the finger is firmly pointed at Donald the Clown. Since he entered the race, the discourse has reached gutter level since Donald Trump has entered the whole thing. The Democratic candidates, that's Hillary and Sanders, are behaving very well. Last night there was a debate between Sanders and Clinton. It was very spirited, but at the same time very mature and refined. If you want to hear Obama's whole speech, I think it was wonderful. It's very easy. Again, just two words into Google, Obama and the word speech, and Bob's your mama G. The first item in Google is the speech I'm talking about. It's actually a video. You will find that very interesting. And you'll find these comments there also. These are the comments about his speech. Bemoaning a poisonous political climate that made citizens cynical and disillusioned and leaders unable to achieve great goals, Obama posed a challenge. What can we do, all of us together, to try to make our politics better? He outlined a few solutions, none of them new. For example, limiting the influence of money in politics, including a constitutional amendment if necessary. At the same time, Obama said the political culture needed to change so that there was less inclination to lie to voters, insult rivals, or propose policies unsupported by science. And here, of course, he's speaking about climate change. Rather than reward the most extreme voices or divisive voices, or who is best at launching schoolyard taunts, we should be insisting on a higher form of discussion in our political life. He didn't name any culprits, but said the fractured media environment, now he's talking about the media, The fractured media environment enabled this kind of discourse. If I listened to some of these media pundits, I wouldn't vote for me either. I sound like a scary guy, he said. I thought that was quite funny. So there you are, folks. Great stuff from Hussein Bhai. And yes, I am envious of him, but this admiration is not unconditional. He has disappointed many times, drones killing innocent people. And I came across this in an article which I put in my newsletter by John Pilger, which I'm 100% certain all of you have already read. He was commenting about the UN ruling in favor of Julian Assange. Julian Assange. the man who released thousands of documents known as WikiLeaks, exposing mainly U.S. dirty dealings. Here is an extract from Pilger's article. He says, the Assange case is rooted across the Atlantic in Pentagon-dominated Washington, obsessed with pursuing and prosecuting whistleblowers, especially Assange, for having exposed in WikiLeaks U.S. capital crimes in Afghanistan and Iraq, the hotel killing of civilians, and a contempt for sovereignty and international law. None of this truth-telling is illegal under the U.S. Constitution. As a presidential candidate in 2008, Barack Obama, a professor of constitutional law, praised whistleblowers as, in his words, part of a healthy democracy and they must be protected from reprisal. Obama, the betrayer, has since prosecuted more whistleblowers than all the U.S. presidents combined. The courageous Chelsea Manning is serving 35 years in prison, having been tortured during her long pre-trial detention. So, as I said, Obama is no saint. But still, dear listeners, that doesn't make me any less envious, or should I say, jealous of him. Have you got time still, Mala?
Yeah, we still need to talk about Palestine, maybe.
Right. Okay, here goes. Now, I'm going to make a very bold and fearless statement. And I really don't care what you think about it, dear listeners, what you conclude about me, or for that matter, how shocked you are by what I'm about to say. Brace yourself, fasten your seatbelt. Here it is. You know, I really admire Israel and its supporters. Just so that you heard it clearly, let me repeat that. I really admire Israel and its supporters. Did you just spill your coffee?
Mm-hmm.
Are you wondering what I am smoking? Okay, relax, dear Bayo or Beno. Let me tell you what I admire about Israel and its supporters. It's the fact that they do a fantastic job in defending Israel. Yes, really. And of course, they pour millions of dollars into projects that ensures that Israel's point of view is given prominence. Let me tell you about just one project. It's called Birthright. Thousands of young Jews from all over the world are taken over to Israel to be intensively educated about why Israel is right, why Israel is the victim and the Palestinians are the bad guys. They are equipped with something called talking points. And what are talking points? They are questions and answers, ready-made. If someone says, for example, why don't you talk to the Palestinians, tells the Israelis. And then you will answer, well, we have no one to talk to. The Palestinians are in two different camps, Fatah and Hamas. They are divided, so who do we speak to? You see, now a top writer by the name of C.J. Wellman wrote a great article about birthright. And here is an extract. He wrote it this week. Here is a quick extract from there. I hope I got a few minutes. This is very important. To be eligible for an all-expenses-paid guided tour of Israel, one must be a high school graduate under the age of 26 and of Jewish ancestry. Of 20,000 annual birthright visitors, more than 80% are American. Put another way, more than 16,000 Jewish Americans return from Israel each year, equipped with the latest and greatest pro-Israeli talking points, which is precisely the politically motivated goal of the predominantly right-wing Jewish American billionaires who fund the program. This makes Birthright an integral component of what is a broad coalition of groups and organizations that actively works to shift U.S. foreign policy in a pro-Israel direction, otherwise known as the Israeli lobby. I have interviewed both formally and casually dozens of Birthright visitors and have particularly sought conversations with those at the end of their 10-day propagandized tour, which again is an easy feat given most itineraries conclude in Jerusalem after taking in the Galilee, the Dead Sea, and Tel Aviv. Notably absent from the itinerary are Gaza and the West Bank. These American tourists are denied the realities of Israel's brutal occupation and segregation of the West Bank and the human catastrophe that has befallen upon nearly 2 million caged Palestinians in Gaza. For these realities pose inconvenient truths to Birthright Israel's overarching message that America and Israel are cultural cousins and thus have shared values, and thus Israel's interests are America's interests. Just one more thing here. When it comes to pro-Israel propaganda, birthright Israel is where the rubber meets the road. Young Jewish American adults return to their communities and campuses with their heads filled with Israel lobby-generated narratives and talking points. Birthright Israel is another reminder that in a contest of competing narratives, listen carefully, Israel versus Palestinian, the former invests hundreds of millions of dollars every year to ensure its contorted narrative is heard far and wide, while the latter relies only on the hope that justice may prevail. So, dear listener, did you hear the last line? Israel and its supporters spend millions to ensure that its viewpoint is heard, while the Palestinians and their supporters rely only on the hope that justice may prevail. How true is this? Well, you decide. Let me give you an example of the success of the Israeli supporters. Now, as we all know, BDS is gaining support worldwide, but Israeli supporters take the case right up to the top of governments in the U.S., including the federal government. It says here, advocates of boycotting Israel are under attack in a number of states across the country. State legislatures in California, New York, Indiana, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Florida are debating anti-boycott measures. Most of them would penalize people or businesses that support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement targeting Israel over human rights violations. Some of the bills would also hit those who only advocate for boycotting products made in Israeli settlements. The wave of anti-boycott bills is backed in some states by pro-Israel organizations. Last year, 22 anti-BDS bills were introduced in U.S. legislatures. BDS is gaining momentum, and that's scaring a lot of people. That's scaring a lot of Israeli advocates, said Rahul Saxena, an attorney of Palestine Legal, a group that fights back against attempts to curb speech in favor of Palestinian rights. Saxena said that instead of debating the movement, pro-Israeli groups are trying to shut the movement down. So, dear listeners, do you see how jacked up they are? They work hard and they spend millions. So you see why I admire them? They do a great job at defending Israel. And I have often said, Maulana, that with their lies, they seem to be winning. And we, with the truth, seem to be losing. And it's been carrying on for the last 60 years or so. So, dear listeners, am I envious of them or am I just jealous?
I'm going to be light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, let's see what I can dig up for this time of the year. Now, Ronnie from Mirbank, he ended up in ICU once again. His friend Ghulam Bhai visited him. What happened this time, Ron? And Ronnie replied, "Hey, bro, what I can say, man? My fro whacked me with a frying pan." And Ghulam Bhai said, "Why she did that?" And Ronnie replied, "Hey, Gulu, I asked her so nicely, Pushpa, what you want for Valentine's Day?" And she said, "Oh, darling, so nice of you. I want you to give me a nice big ring. That's enough." So I answered her, "Okay, no problem. Do you want it from landline or cell phone?" Okay, I got one, something. We've got a few minutes.
Yeah,
one
go minute. For it, go for it, go for it.
Let me venture into an area that I am completely hopeless in this, and that is Urdu. But I will try my best. So here goes. Girl. She phones, right? Mm-hmm. The girl is phoning this boy. She says, "Hello, darling, kya kar rahe ho?" And the boy says, "Shave kar raha ho." And the girl said, "Jabhi main tumko call karti ho, tum shave kar rahe hote ho. Din mein kitni baar shave karte ho?" And the boy replied, 30 se 40 baar." And the girl says, "Tum pagal ho." The boy replied, "Nahi jano, main hajam ho."
I'm laughing in subtitles. You can't see it there, but it's on the screen.
Okay, hajam, of course, yeah. The listeners who don't know much, is a Baba.
Baba, yeah. Okay, Akalevi, is that all you have for us today?
That's all for today.
All right. Have a wonderful day and a weekend. Inshallah, we'll pick it up next week.
Inshallah.
Okay, then. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Yes, indeed, I'm just checking your WhatsApp message. Someone saying, yeah, I'm envious of Uncle AB's humor. Now, also, we've got messages earlier on. We were asking you to message us, you know, whether SMS or WhatsApp or Twitter. You know, in regards to Jalal's, we spoke to them 7:20 this morning. They, the guys that throw this bomb bag on the floor, and people lose their minds because they're dressed in Arab garb. So with, the stereotype perpetuated through mainstream media, people immediately see that they're already thinking terrorist. So they've, you know, jumped on this bandwagon, and, it's very interesting. They've got 1.6 million likes on Facebook. So we're asking you the question, if someone threw a bag close to where you are, what would be your first reaction? And I'm seeing some of the messages, someone saying here on WhatsApp, where is this message now? Okay, first instinct would be to run away. This person saying, first instinct would be to run away. Then looking at the SMSs, someone saying, I would read my kalima. Yes, good option there. Another one on the, what is this on? SMS. Yes, SMS. Yes, it says here, not many would grab the bag. Many would grab the bag thinking there is money in it. That's coming from Brother Eunice or Uncle Eunice. Very funny indeed. So keep sending us your messages. You've got about 8 minutes or so. Let us know. What would you do if someone threw a bag close to you and started running? Would you run as well? Would you pick up the bag? Or would you just know it's a prank from the onset? Let us know. SMS 48855. WhatsApp 072-786-1548. You can tweet me as well at EJAZ_, you know, that line on the floor, K. So let us know what you would do if you were in that position with someone throwing a bag at your feet. Would you run or would you pick it up? Let us know.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.